Discovering This. I'm your host, Yetta. We get to turn the page. There is an answer for all of the horrid pain and suffering of unanswered questions that permeate our world. Being forced to listen to the president's pathetic performance last night, as he was saying that some people stumble in the dark, unable to know or to see their heaven's will for their lives, and of course at the moment screaming at the television and what would have probably looked to be insane from anyone watching me at the time. But I said, have you ever considered reading the Torah? If you want to know heaven's will, you want to know God's will. It's all laid out in the Torah. And then this whole notion that people say, boy, I would really like to know God's will for my life, or the President of the United States saying, you know, we stumble around in the darkness, unable to know God's will. If you're stumbling in the darkness, it's because you're not reading the Torah. All you need to do to understand God's will for your life is to read the Torah. Now, someone would say, how is that possible when the Torah, I'm told, is nothing but a bunch of outdated laws that don't pertain to me? Because the Torah is eternal, according to God. Its teaching endures forever. Forever. And God's never going to change, he says. And the Torah is comprised of teaching. If you were to take each of the words that comprise Torah in Hebrew and all of its cognates and do a comprehensive etymological search of Torah, this is how it would read fully amplified. Torah, the signed, written, and enduring. Torah, way of treating people, giving us the means to explore, to seek, to find, and to choose the source from which instruction, teaching, guidance, and direction flow, which provides answers which facilitate our restoration and return, even our response and reply to that which is good, pleasing, beneficial, favorable, healing, and right, and that which causes us to be loved and to become acceptable and to endure, purifying and cleansing us so as to provide us with an opportunity to change our thinking, our attitude, and our direction. If you want to know God's will, it can be summarized in one word, Bereth. And you say, wait a minute, I don't speak none of that there Hebrew. What do you mean by Bereth? Bereth is the operative word of the Torah. Now, I've just defined Torah for you, so let me explain Bereth. It is based upon the Hebrew word Beeth. Beeth means family and home. So the Bereth is a familial relationship. It is a relationship based upon the model of family and home. What God wants is to adopt us as his children so that we can live with him in his home. He wants to be our father. He wants to lift us up. He wants to get down on his knees so that he can lift us up to him, making us more than we are, helping us grow, keeping us secure, teaching us, guiding us. There's a man who bore the name of Yahusha. He serves his words and deeds, his inspiration serve as a model for the Yahusha that would fulfill the promises of the Torah, enabling them. This Yahusha was present at the revelation of the Torah. He then, this is what is said. Let's read it from the book named Yahusha, which means Yahweh saves. This is 8th chapter, beginning at the 34th statement. Later, therefore, he recited and proclaimed all of the words of the Torah, the blessings of peace and prosperity, and also the slights and denunciations, the vilifications and abominations. Just as all of these things were written in the written scroll of the Torah. So Yahusha, the namesake of the Maaseiah Yahusha, who also walked out of the pages of the Torah, based his very life on making certain that everything in the Torah, all of its words, every one of them, was proclaimed, was known and understood. He therefore recited and proclaimed, Kara, read aloud and called out, inviting and summoning every to the presence of and embrace all of, kol, every one of, the debar, the words, the statements, the messages, the accounts of the Torah, the source of instruction and teaching, the place from which guidance and direction flow. Torah, singular, absolute. The blessings of peace and prosperity. This is barakah, the enriching gifts, the loving benefits. You see, as is the advice of any loving father, he will tell you, his children, these things, if you do these things, you'll be blessed by them. If you consume that which is nourishing, you'll grow. If you listen to Yahweh, if you read and recite his Torah, if you embrace all of the words which comprise the Torah, blessings after blessing will enrich your life. But understand that if you eat things that are poisonous, if you associate with those who are evil, if you're indoctrinated and led astray, if you slight and denunciate, vilify Yahweh by changing his name to Satan's title, the Lord, by disregarding his covenant, by despising his Torah, if you do those things, there'll be a consequence. And so God's guidance, his Torah teaching, contains both, just as would the advice of any loving father. And he spoke these things not as he interpreted them, not as he wished them to be, not cherry-picking those things that he thought were applicable and those things which were dated and no longer pertinent. No, Yahusha read every word. Every word. And understand, the debar, the words that comprise the Torah, are the essence of the Torah. The Torah is comprised entirely of words. Words convey all of its meaning. If you change the words, as our English Bibles do, if you replace names with titles, replacing Yahweh's names with the title Lord, then you are destroying the value of the Torah. And it is a written document. God gave us the map to his home. God gave us the path that we can follow, the compass that we can use to find our way out of religion and politics and patriotism and militarism, away from mass murder, to his home as his children, all of which are written in the written scroll of his Torah. Now, if this man, Yahusha, who was present when the Torah was being spoken to Moshe and to the children of Israel, continued to recite it for himself and for his children and those who were living with him, shouldn't we follow that example? We have Jake on the line from Idaho, and wants to speak of Buddhism for a moment. I don't know how that's going to tie into the Torah, but we're going to trust Jake to make the connection for us. Hello, Jake. Good morning.
Good morning, Yada. I really like your show, and I'm really happy to be on the air today.
Well, good. Thank you.
All right. happen right to it.
Yes.
My question is regarding Buddhism, but let me get a bit of context first. Now, I'm new when it comes to learning about Yah. I've just recently begun listening to your show, and I'm currently trying to read through Introduction to God. I have a roommate with whom I've enjoyed a lot of discussions about religion and politics, and we've stayed up late in the night talking about those things. And during a couple of these conversations, it's become clear to me that my roommate highly regards some of the aspects of Buddhism. Now, I know practically nothing about Buddhism, but in light of my reading of Introduction to God, and more importantly, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that I'm learning about, I'm sufficiently convinced that the religion of Buddhism is flawed and false by comparison. It's my intention not to do any sort of evangelism or anything like that here, but rather just to continue to facilitate discussion with him. And I've not yet told him about my research with Introduction to God, and he's not yet directly asked me what I believe concerning God or what my personal views of religion are. So my question is this. What might be asked in a pointed form that could provoke critical thinking and research concerning Buddhism's principles or histories?
Well, Jake, your question is related to what I just shared in the beginning of this the second hour of the Shattering Myths program. The answer to every question, according to Yahweh, is found in his Torah. The answer to every question. Now, at this point, you're just beginning your journey to come to know the author of the Torah and to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant of the Torah. And as part of that process, you are transitioning now from becoming aware and therefore knowing what the Torah teaches. And over time, you will come to actually understand what the Torah teaches. And that's a process. It requires an investment of time, and you're investing that time, and so you are going to achieve that goal. And when we return, I'm going to speak about the process, because I think I have a direct answer, not only for your question, but for the millions of people that are in exactly the same place that you are. As to
calm.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Jake from Ohio on the line, and Jake has posed of Idaho on the line. Jake has posed a question that is one that many people struggle with, and so I'm going to attempt here to answer Jake's question from the perspective of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and based upon what I've learned, particularly from Dode, who we've misnamed David, relative to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. But there are two aspects of this, Jake, so please stay with me here. And again, your question, I think, is germane to millions of people. And so I'm really glad you asked it. First thing is, before I would recommend that you engage the Buddhist or the Buddhist-leaning individual in discussion about the Torah, I would ask you to continue to read it and recite it, to continue to study. Now, the Introduction to God, which you're reading, is designed to equip you with the tools to study the Torah on your own. It provides the proper foundation, the proper perspective, and an understanding of Hebrew so that you can study it on your own. And then what it does is it kind of leads you through this process to get you started. You know, it's kind of like learning to ride the bike after, you know, the dad will start by holding the back seat for you, and then you'll go from there to training wheels, and then pretty soon you're on your own, and you're pedaling, and you're balancing on your own. All of the material in it to kind of isolate, here's the really important stuff, and here's a good start on understanding it. It gets you going in the right direction. Somewhere along the way, with the Introduction to God, you're going to come to say, now I know who Yahweh is. I love him. I embrace him. I accept him. You're going to come to understand the terms and conditions of the covenant, and you're going to respond to them. And you're going to find the teaching that God provides relative to his covenant relationship to be so compelling, so interesting, that you're going to devote a significant amount of your time to listening to it. And somewhere along that place, because you are a very bright and articulate individual, somewhere along that place, you're going to be like Dode was. You're going to say, all right, I get it, I love it, I understand it, and now I want to share it. And when you can share what God is offering through his covenant in his Torah, based upon your understanding of it, then that's the time. Okay? So first, prepare. Learn yourself. And when the material, when you own the material, when it's literally God's Torah teaching is literally part of the fabric of your soul, then you're ready. If what you're doing in the meantime, if you're kind of thinking in the meantime, well, I'll just ask them to read this book, or I'll quote from this book, you don't own the material. The material is not part of the fabric of your soul. It's not. It doesn't literally create the perspective of your mind. And so I would encourage you to invest the time first. The second thing is that I have found it particularly useful once you know the Torah to learn about religion and politics. See, once you're completely immersed in the Torah, there is no religious or political scheme that is ever going to lead you astray. But before you're immersed in the Torah, it's possible. And so once you're immersed in the Torah, come to understand Buddhism. Now, in this particular case, Buddhism, what are its basic premises? Buddha grew up in the religious context of Hinduism. And he didn't like the way that Hinduism caused so much pain and suffering in the world. And so he came up with his own specific teaching that was designed to diminish the imposition of pain on others and the consequence of pain in your own life. And so you could say, well, you know, diminishing the harm on others and the pain and suffering on others and diminishing pain and suffering in your own life might be a good thing. Now, there's nothing about God in Buddhism. It's not a religion in the sense of a path to God. It is a path to the complete absence of pain. But is that a good thing or a bad thing? And once you come to understand the Torah, you would see that actually as a bad thing, not a good thing. Now, I don't want to go hurt somebody, but I do want somebody to hurt in their soul if they're reliant on politics or religion. I want to expose the thing that they trust so and they believe in so that they will be motivated to consider why it is false and leave it. And if somebody is causing harm, you want to lash out at them. And if you can't feel pain, you really can't love. I mean, that's God's whole approach to those who deceive through religion and politics. He is pained by them. Why? Because he loves his children. So I think that the absence of pain ultimately leads to the absence of love. And that it's a bad thing, not a good thing. And so the whole methodology of the Torah being a family and how fathers respond to protect their children and the family might be the way to reach him. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We have Jake from Idaho on the line. I think I've done a reasonably comprehensive job of answering the question, Jake. But I want to read once again this last statement that we shared from Yahusha. One follows and ask you if you have any more questions. Later, therefore, he recited, this is Yahusha, all of the words of the Torah, the blessings of peace and prosperity, and also the slights, the denunciations, the vilifications and abominations, just as these things were written, exactly as these things were written, in the written scroll of the Torah. There did not exist a word from all of that which Moshe had instructed and directed, which Yahusha did not read, did not call out and proclaim in a straightforward manner, in the presence of the entire assembled community of Yisrael, including the women, the little children, as well as the foreigners who are walking among them. So what's God's example? What's his instruction regarding how you should react with others? Recite the Torah. Read the Torah. Come to understand the Torah. Hi, Jake. Again, did that answer your question, or did you still have others?
Oh, well, for today, yes, it certainly did.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I will undoubtedly have more as I'm reading through, and I will be sure to call in.
Well, great.
Thank you for
let me tell you the one thing that I hope you don't do. And I get a lot of letters on this, and I don't respond in a way that the letter writer seems to appreciate. So I hope you don't fall into this the trap, and I don't think you will. But I get a lot of letters for somebody who gets 100 pages in to say yada yada or introduction to God or questioning Paul, and rather than doing their homework, which I encourage people to do, is to check the translations. I've given you all the basis in Hebrew. Go look it up. Go verify that what I'm saying here is accurate. And verify it by your own study and then proceed. But so many people will just say, well, the shortcut to that is I'll go send this document off to a religious person and see what they have to say. And then they write me back and say, here's what they said. They read, three paragraphs and stopped, and they had all of these complaints. What's your response to them? And what that tells me is this person had not come to understand the material they were sending off anyway, because they had no idea that every one of the answers to the questions that were raised were in the first chapter of the book. And yet they were unaware of them. So my answer is always, I will answer and respond to those, but it's not going to do you any good. Because to really understand it, you got to engage in this process. And that trying to use somebody else as your answer man is not going to help. The whole purpose of this program and of these books is to point you in the direction of the teacher. I'm not the teacher. And so long as I'm being looked at as the teacher, you're not going to grow. You're not going to learn. It's all I'm trying to do is point you in the direction of the teacher, help you understand the teacher, so that the real growth, the real fun of this is learning directly from the teacher. And the teacher here happens to be God, Yahweh. And man, don't shortchange, don't cheat yourself out of the thrill of this great voyage of discovery. It will be the most wonderful, beneficial, exciting, enlightening thing you do in your whole life. And there will reach a time, Jake, where you will come to know this material so well. You'll come to understand what God is offering so well. You'll be so impassioned by what he is telling us that it'll just flow out of you. And there will be ample opportunity to share what you have learned and point others in the direction of the same teacher. That all make sense, Jake?
Yes, sir, it does.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. And as I say, you've asked a question that many ask. And the bottom line is learn. Enjoy the process. The Torah exists for the purpose of teaching you. It sounds like if you have a roommate that you're in school or not long out of school. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is. I'm a grad student.
Okay. Yeah, you sound like that. You sound way too mature to be an undergrad. I'm not trying to demean undergrads, but your thought process is way too disciplined. So I'm not surprised. What are you studying, Jake?
I'm studying architecture, but
okay.
My bachelor's was in virtual technology and design, and I would be a master's in that program, but the master's doesn't exist at the moment.
Okay. Personally, I have an affinity for architecture. I love architecture. By the way, Yahweh loves architecture. He is really into the design of things. His home, which we call his temple, is specifically designed. Every dimension is specifically calculated for a result. This universe that we enjoy, this is his architectural design. And so what you will find is if you as you study Yah's Torah and study his covenant home, is that there is enormous amount of architecture in the process. And you know, I happened to like the Palladian designs. I love the symmetry of Greek architecture, and I'm a amateur architect myself. I love to design things, but you're going to find an enormous commonality with Yahweh in this regard, because he is the grand architect, not only of life and of the universe, but also of specific things like buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jake, thank you again for calling, and we're going to continue our discussion of the Torah. It's important that collectively we all come to know that Yahusha is the living embodiment of the Torah, and that this Christian myth that that Yahusha came to do away with the Torah and was the founder of a new religion is the antithesis of what is being proclaimed to us here in the passages that God himself inspired. And our response to Yahweh's Torah's promises, his fulfillment of them, thereby determines whether or not we are the benefit of Yahweh's baraka, the blessings which enrich us, the loving benefits are of his covenant, or whether or not God sees us as kalal, insignificant and unworthy. Even worse, kalalah, which is someone to denounce and to vilify, someone who is an abomination, a blasphemer. And this whole thing revolves around, what does the whole of the Torah teach? What do the words of the Torah convey? Just as stone and wood and steel comprise the structure of our buildings, words comprise the structure of the Torah. It is built on words. And what those words convey is that we all have a choice. We can choose to embrace the covenant and receive its blessings and its benefits, or we can reject it, or we can even oppose it. And those who oppose the Torah, those who oppose Yah's covenant, those who create a new covenant, who denounce Yahweh's Torah, are seen as an abomination. That's probably not a good thing. Kara, which was the operative word that led into this initial passage, I translated recited and proclaimed. It could have been translated read and recited, the words of the Torah, all of the words of the Torah. Kara is, if you were to boil down all of the words in the Hebrew Torah, Kara might be second only in importance to Bereth, which is the word for covenant. Now, maybe it's third. Maybe Bereth covenant is the most important. Torah, teaching and guidance, is the second most important. And Kara might be the third most important word when you consider all of the words of the Torah. But Kara is the word, the verb that serves as the basis for Mikra and Mikre, which are the seven invitations that God has invited us to walk, to be called out of this world, and to meet directly with him. Kara is the means to that path, because Kara means to read and recite. What do we have to do with an invitation? We have to read it. And so what was Yahusha doing? He was reading the Torah. Now, one of the advantages of reading the Torah out loud, which would mean to recite it, is twofold. One is, when you listen to the Torah being recited, even if you're reciting it to yourself, you actually get to hear God. You listen to God. He wrote the Torah. You listen to God by reciting it. But also, if you're reciting the Torah, you aren't the only beneficiary. All of those willing to listen also benefit, as they did in this particular case. And by reciting the Torah, Hara, you're inviting people not only to consider its guidance, but you're inviting them to meet with its author, the architect of our universe, God himself. So by Kara reciting the Torah and listening to Yahweh's voice, we encounter him. That's how we meet him. That's how we are welcomed by him, all of which is conveyed by Kara. It speaks of calling out and proclaiming. It speaks of being called out. It speaks of invitations. It speaks of reading and reciting. When you understand the verb kara in conjunction with all of the words of the Torah, then you understand God's purpose. Then you know where to find him, how to come to know him, and how to become a member of his family. It's all incorporated in the verb kara in association with the Dabar Torah, the words of the Torah. And as we found here, just as we began our show this morning, it's all amount of choice and consequence. If you elect to accept Yahweh's kara invitation to participate in his covenant as it is proclaimed in the Dabar Torah, the words of his Torah, he will invite you to live with him, and he will adopt you into his family. That is one of the blessings of the covenant. The blessings of the covenant include going from mortal to immortal, going from imperfect to perfect, going from being estranged to being a child of his family. Also, of being enriched by this teaching and being empowered by God himself. All of those are given to those who read and recite the Torah, who answer this invitation and respond. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. It's been enjoyable here, intertwining a call that one would not have thought would have fit so perfectly into the topic of the Torah and of Yahusha inviting us to read and recite the Torah. But nonetheless, it did.
There's a comment I'd like to make quick, and it's something I really enjoy. And you've done this numerous times, and it's something that I find very fascinating. You usually take the caller and listen to what they're talking about, and then you relate that to Yah in a way that makes Yahweh seem very approachable. And I find that fascinating. And I think it's something that you do extremely well. And every time you do it, I can't help but smile. And that's fantastic. And I feel like I should share that with you.
Well, you know, first of all, thank you. But I actually don't deserve any credit for that, because all I'm really trying to do is convey Yahweh's mindset. You know, here you have the architect of the universe. You have the architect of life. You have the architect of the covenant. And can you imagine this architect thinking, well, here's a young man who is coming to know me, who is an architect, a young architect, and I have the opportunity to share my enthusiasm for architecture with someone who loves architecture? I mean, just imagine God's position. The door is wide open. He can't wait to meet Jake, come to know Jake.
But I just think it's great that you understand it so much that you can tell people, you know, look at this. And I just think that, like, I think that gives that gentle push. You know, and your understanding of it, and I understand you're never using, you're plagiarizing, pretty much all of it. And
all I'm doing is reading, reciting what he said. You're right.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I understand that, but I find that two things for me is you gave God a name. And that right there makes it now so, well, if I know somebody's name, I can then begin to talk with them. And
that's right. Good to know.
And then not only that, not only do you give them a name, but then you also you know, and this is what, you know, this might be something that you have in common with them. And I do find that fascinating, and I think it actually helps. It makes me want to read more. I want to know more. I want to go on that, I want to take that journey, and I want to learn things. And you also said that to him, which I think is fascinating, is that if you just gave me the answers, and I never went and read, and all I did was listen to you every day, and I didn't read anything, or I didn't talk with Larry, or anything like that, and I just took stuff that you guys told me, but I never went out and did any reading for myself, that would be, you'd be depriving yourself of something that seems to be an extremely special and eye-opening journey. And
the most fun you can have in this life.
Yeah.
And in the next.
And I think that's another thing that I was extremely happy with to hear today. So,
you know, Scott, there's two things here. Well, first of all, as you know, I personally did not give God a name, but what I did was I introduced you to God's one and only name. And you know that, and that is actually better than me giving God a name, is me introducing you to the name that God chose for himself. But that name tells us so much, because that name is written with the first letter being an arm that is reaching down and out with an open hand. It tells you all about what he wants, his perspective, what he is willing to do for us. And then it shows two people standing on either side of a tent peg. The tent peg symbolized enlarging and securing a home. And these two people, they're standing up, they're reaching up, they're looking up to God. It explains his name, explains what he is offering, and what he is hoping we do in response to what he is offering. But the beauty of what you've just said is that if God had opened with the first paragraph of his Torah guidance with, here are the five things that you should do if you want to be part of my family, if you want to be saved. They are 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Who would have read any further? God would have deprived all of us of this journey of discovery. Now, all five of these things are articulated in the first book of his Torah teaching. But you got to read it. You got to think about it. You got to make the connections to understand it, and that's where the joy of discovery is, and that's where the fun of eternity is going to be. I'm Yada. This has been Shattering Myths. Look forward to being with you again tomorrow.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects.